Hello, fellow Kentuckians and other friends, and welcome to a new edition of My Old Kentucky Podcast. My name is Robert Connie, and joining me today is E.A. Duncan. E.A., how are you today?
I'm well, Robert. How are you? I'm
doing well.
Good.
E.A. is back with us as Jasmine is acting. She's acting.
Oh.
Yeah. Cat's out of the bag. I don't know exactly what she's acting in, but that's why she's not here. We are talking about several different things this week. This is one of those weeks where it's felt like it's been a year.
Yes.
Yeah. So we're going to go all the way back and talk about the House passing a budget, which happened last Thursday. We're also going to talk about some drama that happened on Friday about the local option sales tax bill that we talked about before. And then we're going to talk about COVID-19, the illness sweeping the nation.
The only thing we can talk about this week. And just dramatics in Frankfurt. It's always drama at the end. And
But we're going to talk about the government's response to it, just kind of how things are going there. And then we have a few quick hits that we're going to add in at the end. But without any further ado, let's talk about the budget. So late last Thursday, March the 5th, the House GOP revealed their own budget plan. And then by Friday afternoon, the budget had passed and was already on the way to the Senate. The House budget actually differed in many ways from Andy Beshear's budget proposal, which is pretty normal. But none of the spending priorities except for Kentucky Wired were totally wiped away. They did totally do away with funding for Kentucky Wired. However, the House GOP plan did not include revenue from any new sources, including from sports gambling. And Governor Beshear's budget did include money from several new sources, including from sports gambling. I think that there was also some revenue included from like some vape taxing or some tobacco taxes that was in the House budget. So the Herald Leader actually included a list of items in their write-up of the budget that were different in the House GOP and the Beshear budget. A few of the highlights include the House GOP's budgets, including a 1% across the board increase in pay for school employees. And of course, Andy Beshear campaigned on and included in his budget a 2,000 pay bumps specifically for teachers. So it's like a more broad-based increase. Yeah.
But probably not terribly different for a lot of employees.
Yeah. Andy Beshear's budget included 350 new social workers. The House GOP budget bill only includes 100. So it's 250 fewer social workers.
This one's important to me. And I think it's important to know that there's new national study that came out this week on child abuse rates. And we have the highest child abuse rate in the country. Mm-hmm. So that's, to me, that's kind of them showing their priorities.
Yeah.
Because 100 social workers across an entire state when you have the highest rate of child abuse in America is pretty sad showing of what your priorities are. And I won't belabor it, but retention is probably your bigger problem with social workers. New hires are great. New hires require training. Training costs money.
Right.
Also, the salary is why we lose so many people. So that's disappointing, but not completely unexpected.
Yeah, and 350 seems like a lot, but also like this is responding to a huge problem, which is that we lead the nation in child abuse, right? That's like a huge problem. And, you know, it's nice that
we could probably use 100 new social workers in Jefferson County. Yeah. So, I mean, it's certainly better than nothing, but that 250 reduction is actually really huge.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So another thing that's different is that the House GOP budget includes a $4,112 in SEEK funding. The Beshear budget only included about $4,040. So that's a bump of, you know, $70 or so in the House GOP budget versus Beshear's budget. But still, SEEK went up in both budgets from previous years. The House GOP budget also includes performance-based funding for higher education with a 3% increase in funding. The Beshear budget does not include performance-based funding, but only includes a 1% increase in funding. So that was a little complicated. So the House budget, the GOP budget, increases higher, but those increases are based on the performance-based funding, which has been widely decried, especially in regional universities like Morehead, Eastern, Northern, et cetera. They're very concerned with that whole model, thinking that that's going to take money away from them and towards the bigger flagship institutions like UK and U of L.
I think that's fair critique.
Yeah. And Beshear's budget included like an across-the-board 1% increase. And this is, of course, after years and years of cuts. So both of these budgets include an increase. The last thing is, of course, Kentucky Wired being totally cut out. That's $34.5 million in annual funding for the Beshear budget. That's what was included for Kentucky Wired, and it zeroes that out. So it's extra $90 million that the House GOP budget includes. Which, I mean, that's basically the entire revenue of sports gambling right there.
Your rural legislators. That's who's going to be most concerned with that Kentucky Wired fallout.
Right.
Promises made to them.
There's a lot of stuff going on with Kentucky Wired, and we've of course talked about it at length. But if you just totally zero it out and walk away from the project, that's a lot of money that's invested that you're never going to get back.
Right.
That's a tactical decision that they can make about like, well, we've spent a lot of money and we haven't gotten anything back yet. But, you know, it seems like it's pretty close, and it does seem like that there are some places that are starting to get, you know, access to broadband. So that seems bad, but I think it's really interesting, EA, to kind of talk specifically about the way that the House GOP budget is working. You know, when during the campaign we were like, oh, you know, even if we elect a Democratic governor, you still have a Democratic legislature, and like, how much difference does it make? And this is the first budget that the GOP has come out with since they took power in 2017 that doesn't have new cuts. And our economy is not substantially different. You know, right. If anything, it's maybe a little worse than it was back then. And, you know, I think that this just goes to show that just having a Democratic governor really does set the bar higher. To
balance
start with.
Of any kind is helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's something to be thinking about.
Yeah. I think that definitely goes to the next point.
Yeah. Yeah. And the House budget fully funds the ARC for all pensions except the legislator's pension. And that's something that, you know, both budgets take a lot of care into pension funding, and that's of course been a huge issue across several years. So we have talked quite a bit about Andy Beshear's approach to quasis, and we've been talking about quasis for years, as it's been a pretty significant topic. Just a reminder, his budget allocated about $100 million. That was later changed to $50 million. And that was a subsidy to help offset rising employer contribution rates for quasi-governmental organizations. So if you want more details about how specifically that worked, we talked about that about a month ago.
I was here.
That's right. That was
I'm back
you were
for
here.
More discussion yeah. of quasi.
That's right. That was the one that you did. Okay. So, yes, go and find EA's other show, and you can hear us talk about quasis and how Andy Beshear's plan is different. The House budget, the House GOP budget, it allocates about $3.75 million for domestic violence shelters, rape crisis centers, and child advocacy centers specifically. So about 40% of that money is a direct offset to rising employer contributions, and 60% of that money is just operational support revenue. So
right.
they could use it for pensions if they needed to. You know, comparing the $50 million to $3.75 million isn't quite apples to apples, but you can definitely see that the House GOP bill includes quite a bit less support for quasis.
I think it seems to me they picked some quality bipartisan issues when they chose DV shelters, rape crisis, child advocacy. Yeah. I mean, these are places that they don't want shuttered
right.
by this quasi-pension issue. Obviously, those are important community partners. Thrilled to see them get some funding. But yeah, it's not a it's 50 to 4.
Yeah.
Not even 4.
Yeah.
Is
That's a blowout. Yeah. And you're exactly right there. They're picking bipartisan things. And they're also the things that Andy Beshear talks about specifically. Whenever he talks about quasis, these are the three things that he specifically talks about, because I think that they are the most, you know, they're the things that people
universally
yeah.
supported.
I mean, if you start talking about regional universities, like that's people are attached to those in those communities. But, you know, people don't get as, you know, incensed about lack of funding for child advocacy centers versus, you know, something else. So yes, the approach to quasis is quite a bit different. One item that definitely got some attention in the GOP budget was $500,000 for what's called the Ordered Liberty Program, which is a conservative group at U of L that's supported by the Federalist Society.
Yeah, this has gotten a ton of attention, and I'm happy to see that. And even if the community maybe isn't buying in on why this is getting so much attention, I'm glad that the legislators are, because it seems like a pretty unprecedented use of state funds. It's $500,000. It's literally a law school student group. I did see one mention early on when people were talking about this money that maybe it is somehow tied to a specific U of L student that maybe is serving on the DC circuit or trying to get a clerkship,
yeah.
an important clerkship, and, you know, great for them. But that's $500,000 in a state budget that's going to a, I don't know how versed the listeners are in the Federalist Society, but I mean, this is a very specialty, very conservative group and concept, and based on legislative reactions alone, I would say that this has got to be pretty unprecedented.
Yeah. Yeah. The Federalist Society is a very conservative organization that has, you know, a lot of people who are on the Supreme Court in the conservative wing. I think 4 out of the 5 justices are members of the Federalist Society or former members of the Federalist Society, and a lot of people use that as kind of a springboard for conservative justices
right.
across the country. So, yeah, it is a little unusual. And even if it's like to support somebody trying to get a clerkship, I'm not sure if that's the best use of $500,000
exactly.
of my
and
tax dollars.
I do think it's 2 years, right? So it's
yeah.
$250 a year. But
I guess that's
again,
right.
I don't.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like supplementary income to your clerkship pension. I don't
yeah.
know. I don't know enough about it. I just that was one little point that somebody was saying.
Yeah.
Regardless, I think it it seems like an unnecessary line in the budget.
Totally agree with that. Another thing that kind of came to light after the budget was actually even passed is that the budget includes a cut of about $2.5 million to direct aid to libraries. That's really important, especially for smaller libraries across the state. A lot of the smaller ones are probably going to have to close with the budget as written. Larger library systems like Louisville, you know, they're not going to close, but that's money that libraries across the state depend upon. And so you may see a reduction in programming in some of the bigger places. So that's bad.
And again, showing priorities, this to me highlights the misunderstanding of what libraries probably even do for a lot of communities.
Right.
I mean, I don't know directly who put this in and who discussed it on appropriations and what cities they're all from, but in general, I mean, even in the big cities where they're luckily not going to close, I mean, I think that vastly underestimates what libraries are and do for every community in our very poor state.
Right. So, I remember when the Medicaid waiver was kind of going through and people were like, well, we have to fill this stuff out online. What about people who don't have online access or don't have internet at home? Because there's poor communities and they're like, well, they can just go to a library. But if there's no library, you know, if there's no library, then they can't do that. So it's like, doesn't seem like it makes any sense.
I'm a big fan of the library and I don't rely on it. But every time I'm there, they are very crowded these days.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this is, I don't know. It's a little bit shows me that they're perhaps out of touch and underestimating that they're community centers as much as they are libraries.
And you mentioned, you know, you don't know who inserted this or who talked about it on appropriations. And there just wasn't much discussion about this altogether. So really nobody, the guys that wrote the budget, Representative Meredith et al. The budget passed the House after it was announced. It passed 86-10. Some of the more progressive lawmakers in Louisville and Lexington voted against the budget. Angie Hatton, she did end up voting for the budget, but I mean, I think that just because she voted for it doesn't mean she didn't have a lot of questions, and she asked a lot of those. I think even though a lot of Democrats ended up voting for the budget because, you know, it's the budget, there were a lot of kind of like, we have problems with this process, and our next story, I think, will get to the heart of that. The budget is now moved along to the Senate. There's definitely going to be substantial changes made in the Senate. I think this library thing will probably get dealt with on some form or fashion, probably $500,000. The Senate is likely to increase the money to the Ordered Liberty Society. So I don't know what's going on there. We will see what happens as always, and you can come check us out in a future week to see what changes the Senate makes to the budget. So yeah, House budget, very exciting stuff for sure. But I did mention in the previous, a couple bullet points ago, that, you know, there was some fallout about this, and that kind of happened around HB 475. HB 475 is the constitutional amendment that would give local governments the option to add a local sales tax. We talked about it just last week, I believe, and we talked about how the bill had 38 Republican sponsors and 15 Democratic sponsors, including nearly everybody in leadership. I think just Angie Hatton and Bam Carney were out on that, and Bam Carney is, of course, in a coma. I said last week that it would definitely pass, and it did not. It did not pass. So the bill was called actually after the budget passed, and it failed on a 51-17 vote. So constitutional amendments like this one require 60 votes for passage, and it only got 51. Most Democrats voted pass, including all of the Democrats who had co-sponsored the legislation. So what is going on here? That is a big question I had for sure.
What happened, essentially, is that, or at least from what I can understand, the Democrats sat down with this bill, wanted to really consider things, and the Republicans said, we're just going to push this through anyway.
Yeah, it was kind of complicated. There was a lot of things that were going on. But it became really clear that Republicans were going to depend upon Democrats to get this bill to pass. Like, the bill needed 60 votes.
For the first time in a long time.
Yeah, well, yeah. I think that this has happened a couple of times before, especially with the constitutional amendments or closer bills. But it was very clear that this was not going to get 60 votes without Democratic votes. So Democrats got together and decided that, you know, none of their bills ever get heard. They didn't get a chance to chime in on the budget. They didn't see the budget until like the day before it actually came up for a vote. I mean, there's been stuff that's been building this session, including not getting the bill on sports gambling heard. But of course, we can go all the way back to previous sessions. We can talk about the sewer bill.
Exactly.
We can talk about all kinds of things that have just been going on for years and years about like Democrats getting really frustrated because they've been kept totally out of the loop. And, you know, the Federalist Society group that we just talked about is a big one.
It's also a regressive sales tax. Mm-hmm. So they shouldn't have expected a lot of Democratic support without discussing, at least discussing the bill with them further.
Yeah.
And Angie's quote, sorry, I'm skipping ahead, but we'll talk about Angie Hatton made an awesome floor speech. And it, within it, she says, we came to y'all. We said, give us some time. And you pushed it through anyway. Mm-hmm. And so here we are.
Yeah. I think it became clear that the Democrats didn't have the votes to deliver to them. And they said, hey, you can't call this right now. Yeah. And they did anyway. Of course, I think that the Republicans were just looking at the people that just co-sponsored it. And I think if just the Democrats that co-sponsored the bill voted for it, they would probably have been able to get it to pass. But of course they didn't. And yeah, you mentioned Angie Hatton, who did give a great speech, but Republicans were really mad. And Jerry Miller called the vote a travesty. Randy Bridges called Democrats weak. Angie Hatton said, you know, sometimes you'll lose. That was my favorite part of that
quote. I mean, it was certainly politicking. I don't think I would take anything away from that other than she had her moment to give this speech, but I think it was important. I mean, the fact that they went as far as to call this a travesty and call the Democrats weak, and she just completely addresses that and says, you know, you all win all the time and we never call, you know, we never call you names. Yeah. We're entitled to this process. You deny it to us regularly. Mm-hmm. It also reminded me a lot of parallels at the federal level, particularly pre-midterms. I mean, it had this kind of flavor of what Democrats in Washington were dealing with as well, where they're saying, you can't blame us.
Right.
You have the votes.
Yeah.
So go get them.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Go get them because you have the votes and you can't be mad at us.
Yeah, that's exactly what Alan Gentry, a Louisville Democrat, said. He did not co-sponsor the bill and has never really spoken too positively about it. And he said, last I counted, you had more than 60 people in your caucus.
Right.
Like, if you had whipped your own votes, you could have passed this, but you came to us. You wanted to work with us and then didn't give us anything in order to get you to help you push forward with the bill. One thing that is hanging over this is, like, Leader Joni Jenkins, when she gave her floor speech, said that, like, she agreed with the bill. And I think that a lot of the people that co-sponsor the bill and a lot of the Democrats still do support in concept the ability of local governments to diversify their revenue streams. And the payroll tax isn't exactly progressive either. The way that it's laid out is a tax on wages, so you can't really deduct your income. There aren't, like, gradations, I don't think, in terms of, I think it's just a flat wage tax. So all wages are taxed. So it's pretty regressive as well. And yeah, I think that a sales tax would be a way to kind of diversify revenue to allow local governments to do more things. So, I don't know what I would have done. But I think it makes sense that they talked about, you know, they needed to make this point to make their voice heard. Republicans, of course, attacked Democrats for, like, playing politics and putting points ahead of policy. And I think that none of the Democrats really said that, you know, they disagreed with that.
Right. I also think it's pretty rich that our current sitting Republicans want to call that playing politics, as if they don't try to pass the same unconstitutional.
Right. Well, abortion measures.
Yes, exactly. And, there are abortion measures in every session that just do nothing but swirl around and cost us tax dollars. And
Marilee Marzian always wants to call them the fund the ACLU bill.
Right.
Yeah.
And we've talked about before. I mean, there are certain senators, I'll give Morgan McGarvey his shout out where it's due, that try to be bipartisan and try to work. And it basically, he's told, you're not going to get a win. We're not going to allow you to get a win, even if you propose certain things that should be bipartisan.
Right.
So especially in this session of sports betting, medical marijuana, I mean, these kinds of things that we, even if they're getting addressed, they're not getting the attention that the all polling says all of their constituents support.
Yeah.
I thought it was a strong move. I liked it.
Yeah.
That's me.
One thing about it, though, that is a little, makes me feel a little wary, is, like, this is clearly, like, a calculation.
Right.
Right. And you know, they think that they can extract some more compromises from Republicans by standing up for themselves, maybe get some of their bills heard when they need them next time. But of course this strategy could backfire.
Right.
It could be that, you know, the Republicans say absolutely not. And
now
also
we'll never give you anything.
And also all these things that we hadn't heard, because, you know, we heard that there were some people that were opposed to them. We're just going to start hearing them. I don't know. What do you said you liked it. Are you at all concerned about that potentiality?
I am trying to not focus on the potential for the backfire, mostly just because I loved the moment. But
yeah.
I definitely agree. I mean, again, we know the votes are there and that this will likely end up passing. And so did you do it for nothing? Did you do it for a soundbite? I don't know, but but I can't help but love it. That's just who I am.
it's been so long since Democrats had control of anything that, you know. One last thing about this is that the bill isn't totally dead. It can be resuscitated later if the GOP either gets votes from their own caucus or gets the Democrats to agree to it. You know, we'll see if that happens. Just like the budget, you know, nothing's ever over until the 60th day's bell has rung, I guess. Okay, last thing for today is to talk about the COVID-19 response by the Kentucky government. And this is a story that has, of course, been very much evolving every single day since, you know, I guess Andy Beshear started doing press conferences about a week ago. So COVID-19 has, of course, come to Kentucky. You've definitely already heard about this. The initial case came from Cynthiana, which is in Harrison County. And if you aren't familiar with that part of the state, that's between Lexington and Cincinnati on 75. Since the initial case was announced on Friday, there have been 5 more cases announced, most of which have been in Harrison County, but there's been 1 in Jefferson County, I think 2 in Fayette counties. So in response to this major global crisis coming to Kentucky, Governor Andy Beshear has taken to doing daily press conferences, updating the state about the progress of the outbreak. And today he actually did 2 press conferences, and he said that that might happen depending on how this progresses. Yeah, it became clear that the virus is spreading in Kentucky due to community transfer, and that the governor has passed on the advice to nursing homes that they need to like severely restrict visitation. I think they said like unless somebody is like dying, don't let anybody see this person.
Right.
You know, the daily press conferences have drawn good reviews, and I'm one of the people who are giving them a good review.
Yeah, I think I'm never sure if I'm in my echo chamber or not when I see such positive response to local government, but yeah. I would agree. I mean, overall, I think overwhelmingly so, everybody that I see posting anything about these or talking about them seem to think he's doing a good job. He stays calm. They're very grateful that it's not that we're not still in the Bevin era. Yeah. We have no selfies with hand sanitizer. We have no really obnoxious gaslighting tweets.
Yeah.
So... it sounds like people are pleased with how Andy is handling the issue.
I think you're exactly right. I think the word that you said that I attached to there was calm and reassuring. I wrote down some quotes from some of his press conferences like, this has been expected. We are ready for it. It's what we always thought we would see with this novel coronavirus. I don't know what to call this. Also, the coronavirus, the novel coronavirus or COVID. It's like all of these things. You know what they are. You know, the Cynthiana... The first person who got the disease, the virus, I guess, worked at a Walmart. And you know, he talked specifically about that. And he said, I know it's going to make you nervous. Just because you've been there doesn't mean you have it. And then the last thing is that we are going to hear about more positive tests, and we have to be prepared for that. I think that that's really key because that is something that will certainly happen, you know, especially as we get more testing capabilities and preparing everybody for that large jump that likely will occur once we get more kits in.
Exactly. But I think it sounds like there's been really positive things from who we've tested so far in general. I mean, a lot of negative tests considering considering how small the pool is. So
yeah, absolutely.
That's good. It's reassuring and helps support what everyone is asking everyone to do, which is pretty restrictive. But it seems like we need to do it.
One thing that I also was really reassured with is, you know, one thing that, of course, is a hot topic across the country is just like partisanship and how everything has gotten like super partisan. And Andy Beshear talked about specifically about working with the legislative leaders, which of course are all Republicans. And he was like, everyone is united in this. Talk specifically about that. And I think that's really great. You know, in crises like this, party shouldn't matter at all. And I think that it's really great that it seems like everybody's been able to set aside, you know, their own party whenever it comes to like dealing with this specific crisis. We did mention testing, but that is something we should probably talk about in the midst of this. So this has been an issue across the country. But, you know, I think the Cynthiana person was tested in Atlanta. The state has actually, at the beginning, had to send folks down to Atlanta to get tested at the CDC. Since then has received about 800 to 1,000 test kits was the report that I saw. So, you know, in order to get tested, you have to meet like a very specific set of criteria, including like, you know, a community transfer is definitely occurring and you have to like have traveled or have had contact with somebody that we know has had the COVID-19 virus. And there's a lot of people that are presenting with symptoms that doctors are like, I would really have to get this person tested, that they're not able to get tested.
Right, because it's still flu season. So we're going to have a lot of overlapping symptoms. Yeah. And tests. They're not able to test.
Yeah.
And so again, we're going to have a huge jump when the kids are available, because inevitably, once we can test, we are going to find out that more people have it.
And of course, just because people are not getting tested does not mean they don't have it. So when that big jump occurs, that's good. That means that we're actually doing the testing and we're able to get a better sense of what's going on. So a few of the actions that the governor is taking is that the governor signed an executive order that would give pharmacists the ability to refill prescriptions for extra days to help people who might get stuck in isolation. You know, if you get coronavirus or, you know, you get exposed to somebody with it and you want to do the self-isolation thing, getting some extra ability to have extra pills at your house so that you can, you know, take your medication while you're stuck in isolation is something that's good. And he also directly asked companies which do not offer sick leave to do so, came right out and said it. You know, I wish that there was more he could do around this. I wish there was more that the state could do to force companies to offer sick leave to workers, especially workers who don't have it already. But I think that, like, being direct and using the bully pulpit is something that not every person who serves as governor would necessarily do, like try to get companies to pay their workers more money. So I do appreciate him doing that. I don't know what else he could do there, but I think it's good to have him out there doing that. And then today is March 11th, the governor did a press conference in the morning. So this was the first time he did two. And actually today he asked for much more drastic measures. I think that, you know, with the way that this is kind of starting to spread across the country, he actually asked churches to cancel services. I was supposed to play Jesus in a scripture reading at my church on Sunday, which has been canceled.
You should have been at the press conference. Raise your hand. Like, told him.
Excuse me. Maybe I should.
I need an exception for my particular church.
Maybe Andy Beshear can let me do the press conference and read the scripture as Jesus. Yeah, maybe that can be what we did. So he did ask churches to cancel services. He asked workplaces to move to remote work when possible. And actually, at the Capitol, some drastic measures were taken. Chairs are actually set apart in committee rooms instead of being stuck next to each other to do this, like, social distancing thing. And also, the cafeteria is still serving food, but Andy Beshear said everyone needs to eat at their desk. He's actually recommending everybody eat at your desk so that you don't get sick. So the cafeteria's tables are all stacked on top of each other, and nobody's eating in the cafeteria. There was kind of interesting, and I actually mentioned this on Twitter, but you know, the boys basketball tournament and the girls basketball tournament, the KHSAA Sweet 16, is still going on. And Governor Beshear was asked specifically about that both this morning and this afternoon. I actually had to turn, like, I walked in here to this space as this question was getting asked. So I don't know what the response was. But Governor Beshear did say that people need to follow the protocols and that if you're sick, stay home. And if you're old, stay home. But, you know, these events are going to go on. And I thought, I just feel it's maybe a little incongruent. If I was to offer, like, one criticism of Andy Beshear in the midst of this response, which I think has been overwhelmingly good, it's a little silly. I know this event is very important and you know, popular, and communities really depend upon it for, like, you know, this is what their year builds to a lot of the time. But it is a little silly to, like, ask churches and ask, you know, put the cafeteria, shut the cafeteria down at the Capitol and still have this massive event go on in Lexington.
And I wouldn't be surprised if that does end up changing. I mean, I watched over the course of the afternoon. I know this isn't exactly state news, but it still is, because the SEC tournament has already started making their initial, they've only committed to playing games with fans tonight.
Really?
So starting tomorrow, they're going to revisit it,
which
I think is in direct response to the NCAA has affirmatively said, we will have no fans, which is going to be crazy and bizarre. So, again, I saw a lot of funny tweets in the morning that were saying, oh, you don't have to go to church on Sunday, but you could still drive to Nashville and watch the SEC tournament if you wanted to.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that that's not going to change by tomorrow.
Yeah.
So
I was like, every team is, like, upset at their fan base, and like, our team is used to playing with no fans. So anyways, I think that this is definitely going to get worse. Like we've mentioned, you know, the number of tests are going to go up. The commercially available, like, you know, being able to get the test in your doctor's office, once that becomes available, this is really going to go up.
And the governor also had a 2:30 phone call with all the superintendents.
Yeah.
And I think that will be a really interesting thing to watch. And it sounds like so far, I mean, he didn't require anything of them as far as closings go, but he required them to have a lot of plans in place for what would happen. And I did hear that Boone County is canceled for the next 20 days.
Wow.
So, I mean, I would say that's only the first of many cancellations. It sounded a little bit, if you read between the lines, like from some JCPS things, that perhaps they're just trying to get to Monday, and then they're only 1 week from spring break, I think. So, yeah. You know, the closer they can get to spring break and they can just hook it to spring break like the universities are trying to do.
Yeah.
But that, I mean, that obviously will have incredible impact on parents, particularly working parents that don't have childcare. Yeah. I don't know what people do when you close schools for 3 weeks.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's probably not great. And then also, you know, the higher education thing is something you just mentioned, but Berea College is canceling like their whole semester
right
at this point. And I think UK and U of L both are moving to like an online model for the rest of the semester.
They're going to go through spring break. And then, yeah, I think they're going to try a week of online and revisit again. And
yeah.
I feel bad already for people that maybe aren't going to get to walk at graduations. And you hate to look too far ahead, but I also saw something about, you know, the event that will not be named is that nobody even wants to talk about the potential for Derby to be canceled.
Oh, yeah.
And Derby's never been canceled in history.
Yeah.
It was moved once to June.
Well,
Courtney Kellner told me that, but it's been moved one time. So hopefully this isn't time two.
Yeah. I do think that this is the number of cases are definitely going to go up, but I do think the Bashir administration is well equipped to do the best with the resources that we have. In case anybody thinks that these are like overly drastic measures, just, you know, Google Italy, you know,
right.
or Iran.
It's horrifying.
Yeah, it's really scary, the things that are happening.
The newest news push I saw on Italy is that all businesses that are not a pharmacy or a grocery store are closed.
Are closed.
For the country.
Yeah. Yeah,
so.
For the whole country. And, both of those places have like over 6,000 cases. You know, this could get really, really bad very, very quickly. If it starts impacting the healthcare environment and people aren't able to like get treatment, of course they're just exposing more and more people, and this thing can really start to spiral. So the more that we can do to kind of, you know, what they the flatten the curve,
flatten the
I
curve,
guess, is
yes,
what they said.
many articles about flattening a curve we've all had to read in the last week, but it is, again, it's important, and it seems to be working. Hopefully it's working. It's working in Korea, so
yeah.
I mean,
working a lot of places. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face, even though that's absolutely impossible.
Yeah, completely impossible.
It is not impossible to wash your hands, yes. though. Do that all the time. That's COVID-19 in Kentucky. Some quick hits before we get out of here. So HB67, which we talked about back on February 20th, that's a constitutional amendment which would say that women have no constitutional right to abortion. That passed the House on a 71-21 vote. 10 Democrats ended up voting yes, which is actually lower in terms of a percentage than most other years when we've had these types of votes. And then relatedly, HB 451, which is a bill that clarifies the role of the Attorney General around regulation of abortion clinics, also passed 70-23. So I saw that both of these passed with like people wearing the Handmaid's Tale outfits.
Right.
I think... To me, this goes back to the sales tax thing. I don't know if this would have necessarily gone through because there's some other constitutional amendments that the folks in Frankfurt want to pass. And I think that maybe HB 67 is a little bit of like a punishment for Democrats who didn't vote for the local option sales tax to put this on the ballot in 2020. So, yeah, that's...
And again, to me, that's a bill that's politicking, and that's
absolutely
a waste of all of our time.
No, no.
Whereas
doubt.
The role of the AG is more distressing to me, and further emphasizes down ballot voting.
Yeah.
And the situation that we've put ourselves in, with all due respect to Daniel Cameron, it's distressing to me that a bill like that exists and that he is going to have, could potentially have more of a role.
Yeah.
Both of them are disappointing, but
yeah.
They're not anything really new, I guess.
Well, in case you want more things to be disappointed with, so Jim Duplessis and Stanley, who are Republicans from E-Town and Lexington, respectively, they have proposed HB 605, which was in committee when I walked in here, and I do believe it passed. I would have assumed it passed. That is a bill that would change the way that Louisville's city elections are done to make them nonpartisan. And really, you know, nonpartisan elections are not necessarily uncommon for city governments. And I'm not necessarily opposed to them. But this is a ridiculous bill because it's a bill that literally only impacts Louisville. Like, it only impacts Jefferson County and Louisville. And the sponsors are somebody from E-Town and somebody from Lexington. And really, nobody knew that this bill was coming. I got a message from Councilmember Bill Hollander, who's like, you should talk about this because this is like on the fast track. And we didn't even know about it until like a couple days ago. Like, they're sneaking this. They're trying to like sneak this by the people of Louisville for political reasons. And I also just go back to like, this might be punishment for the sales tax bill. And it's just totally ridiculous that you're like, oh, you know, we don't like the actions that some legislators took on the floor, and now we're going to punish an entire city.
Well, you're also going to make a public statement that other people are playing politics, other people are putting points ahead of policy, and then you're going to fast track a bill that has nothing to do with your constituency.
Yeah, absolutely. So. Seems like politics to me.
Yeah.
Totally ridiculous. All right, so, you know, a lot of stuff that's happened. Hopefully this week, it does not feel like a year, but... EA, thank you for joining
Thanks
me.
So much for having me again.
Yeah, really glad that you're here. All right, so people can get a hold of us by finding us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at MyOldKYPod. You can support us for as little as a dollar a day on Patreon. We have our show notes that come out in a newsletter. You can get that at forwardky.com/email. And I'm surely missing something.
If you become a Patreon subscriber, you might get asked to co-host someday. So yeah. that might be a part of a new friendship. So
yes.
You should look them up.
Yeah, or at least a sticker. all right. Well, thank you for joining us, and we will see you next week. And the meadows in the blue.